I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. On the phone now, via Skype, is Zach Voorhees, V-O-R-H-I-E-S. And he's going to talk about Google's covert operations to undermine democracy, freedom of speech, and manipulate our lives. Now, as you saw from our video yesterday, YouTube, which is controlled by Google, is bragging about how they're going to not allow anything that's not officially sanctioned news and information on its platform. So a lot of people are going to have completely legitimate information that is scientifically solid and thrown off. That's what's happening. Zach is here as a former senior software engineer at YouTube and Google for over 8 years. During that time, he discovered Google's artificial intelligence program known as Machine Learning Fairness and the company's strategies for classifying all news data and censoring what it regarded as fake news. This included efforts to completely re-rank the entire internet according to Google corporate cultural values. And after investigating internal Google documents in his possession, Zach turned whistleblower. Zach delivered 950 pages to the Department of Justice and released the same to the public. Now, having departed from Google, Zach's now devoted to helping raise awareness about Google's covert activities. Recently, his first book, Google Leaks, A Whistleblower's Exposé of Big Tech Censorship, co-written by a Kent Heckenlively, who has been on this program speaking about autism and vaccines, and recounts Zach's experience at YouTube and his discoveries about big tech's agenda to shape our reality. His website is Zach, I'll spell it VORHIES.com. Nice to have you with us today, Zach.
Gary, thank you for having me back on the program.
We saw this morning in the news headlines that YouTube has now officially stated it is banning whatever it subjectively and with gross bias decides as vaccine misinformation. Now, this difference here is that this doesn't pertain only to the COVID vaccines, but for all vaccines. People in our network for many years, such as Robert Kennedy Jr. and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, were singled out. No doubt our documentaries on vaccines, which were still on YouTube as of today, will eventually be removed. I'd like to begin with you to discuss the main issue of censorship as a fundamental mission within Google and YouTube, but also pertaining to Facebook, Wikipedia, and others, and that is they're calling to censor something and it's completely subjective and the mainstream media is not challenging them. Congress is not challenging them. And I noticed on a video clip of a Google or YouTube executive referring to authoritative news. Now, interesting choice of words, since the difference between authoritative and authoritarian is a very ambiguous or porous one. Therefore, there must also be an underlying agenda, something that we're not told behind what and what not to censor. We can call these reified beliefs, let's say, ideologies or socio-political positions and alliances. Now, the agenda can certainly be monetary as well. So you were on this program about 20 months ago, shortly after you first blew the whistle about internal information and documents you had while working with YouTube and made public on Project Veritas. Please begin, Zach, by summarizing what you discovered then with respect to Google's enormous influence and power to virtually manipulate all public discourse and social and political perceptions. And then what have you further learned since then? I'm sure there's been other people seeing your courage to come forward who were still at that time ensconced in the Google empire who might have come forward to leak additional information from you. I'm just speculating. Your departure from YouTube was also before the pandemic, and now Google and big tech are major players in both the dissemination and banning of information regarding COVID. Moreover, their position is completely in lockstep with the federal health agencies, Anthony Fauci and Big Pharma. What, if anything, has changed? The forum is yours.
Thank you, Gary. So to summarize what I found at Google, you know, I was a 8.5-year senior software engineer at the company. Everything was really great until Donald Trump won the election. And then Google decided that they were going to start turning on a secret project that they had, which was their real censorship engine, which was called Machine Learning Fairness. Machine Learning Fairness is the merging of critical race theory and artificial intelligence to take the narrative of the progressives, of the radical progressives, and institute that as a filter for how we're able to search for information. One of the poignant examples that I saw of the abuse of the system was how it was manipulating all the different search results, even down to the predictive text of which you would enter in search terms into Google. One of the ways that people find out whether something is trending or not is if they are typing a search into the Google search and Google search starts auto-predicting different items. You get a sense that those predictions are based upon the traffic of people searching for those items. And what's really creepy is when they started to replace those terms with their social justice definitions. For example, if you typed in men can into the Google search, you can probably try this right now. It still works. Google will auto replace it with men can have periods, men can get pregnant, men can cry. And if you did the same thing like women can, it will auto complete into things like women can get drafted. And what's really interesting is that now one of the big things that is going down through Congress is the institution of the draft for women. And what Google wants to do is it wants to program its users by limiting their access to information. And this isn't just something I have interpreted. This is something that I actually found in slides in multiple documents across the company, where they say that programming people is a four-step process, which includes this step one, that training data are collected and classified. Two, algorithms are programmed. Three, media are filtered, ranked, aggregated, or generated. Step four is people like us are programmed. And then those individuals then create new information, and we go on to the next cycle. This was not just some errant engineer's opinion in one of the documents. This was found throughout the different parts of the company. This machine learning fairness is a type of artificial intelligence that is able to come to sensible conclusions based upon the input data that it receives in its training set. After it trains and figures out what the patterns are, then it can be fed new data and that it will make classifications based upon what it has learned in the previous training set. For example, you can have a classifier, one of these things generated from machine learning fairness, and this classifier could detect hate speech in news articles. And the way that they would train that is they would have a collection of human raters go through a collection of news stories and then manually rate them as true or false. This is then fed into machine learning fairness, which generates a classifier that will have an understanding of the patterns that are associated with that fake news. Now you give it news stories it has never seen before, and it's going to make pretty accurate classifications on that data based upon what it learned before. Now here's the kicker. If you limit the amount of information that is allowed to go into this machine learning fairness, then what you're going to get is you're going to get highly skewed, highly biased rankings on the entire internet. And this is essentially what Google is doing. And they're doing this with machine learning fairness, but also one of their big components is something called an EAT score, which stands for expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. This EAT score is a major factor in the PageRank score that Google uses to rank every single person, topic, or website on the internet. And the way that this EAT and PageRank score works is that the scoring goes higher if the mainstream media likes your topic, website, or person that's involved in the website. And if the mainstream media doesn't like you, then your score goes down. They literally state in this PageRank evaluation document that they posted publicly that that the rater should use Wikipedia as a way of classifying, you know, the PageRank score. And what's really interesting, Gary, is that this PageRank score is secret. You can't audit it. You can't get them to testify about it. Ted Cruz himself demanded to know what his PageRank score was, and Google refused. And so what they're doing is they're slowly but surely turning up the heat, creating, you know, fact checkers that are highly partisan and political. And they're using this as cover to basically create Chinese style censorship in the United States and create that as the de facto policy, even though they don't have the force of law behind them. And what you see today is what you see. A day after Project Veritas launched their investigative expose of the Johnson & Johnson employees admitting on camera that their vaccine was unsafe and that it shouldn't be given to children, instead of an investigation into why Johnson & Johnson's employees are saying this, or instead of Johnson & Johnson issuing an apology, you know, denying that this is true, instead they kind of hunker down, and now YouTube has decided to ban all anti-vaccine information, or what they call misinformation. And what they mean by misinformation is things that are damaging to the state. We used to call it the deep state. Since the Biden regime has come in, I consider it more of just the state. And the state, which is a merging of corporate and government power, is allowing Google and YouTube and Facebook to essentially control the entire culture and the information that we can search for. And anything that they disagree with, they're eliminating it. And what's unfortunate is that they're essentially backdooring Chinese-style censorship into the United States. And the people here didn't vote on it. We didn't decide this collectively. It was just pushed on us by a bunch of people sitting far away in their billion-dollar mansions, making decisions on what is real and what is not real in reality. And as history has proven, what they say is not real is they're not saying that because it's truth or not truth. They're saying it because it is truth and it's damaging to their narrative and they want to lock it back down. And this is essentially where we are right now. We're in a lockdown society, both physically and through the information landscape, which we try to interact with the internet. And this trend is continuing to get tighter and tighter. And the question is, how far are they going to go? And every single time we draw a line, big tech seems to step over it. And now we see the real dangers of fascism, which is essentially this vaccine mandate for a vaccine which is not safe, which has not been properly tested, and causes horrible side effects that can be witnessed on a number of databases that collect such information, including Google's own trend search. I mean, just do a trend search for blood clots at trends.google.com, and you'll see that the largest spike, like a 5x spike of blood clot searches, came right at the same time that the vaccine was administered and never went back to baseline levels. It is now permanently higher. And you know, what's interesting is that in response to this, big tech is clamping down harder. There's no investigation. And the question is, how far are they going to push it?
And Johnson researcher.
Hello. Quote,
yes, we have an unclear need. Yes, we have an unclear need with unclear motivation, significant safety concerns, poor evidence to sustain boost efficacy, and wrong priorities, end quote. That's exactly from Dr. David Weiserman, a top Johnson & Johnson researcher. Now, there are many physicians. We're talking about thousands of physicians and medical experts who have slammed the COVID-19 vaccines and call for mass COVID vaccination at an FDA meeting on booster shots last week. And the experts, including a top Johnson & Johnson research, warned that the shots, quote, kill more people than they save, end quote, and, quote, pose a clear and present danger, end quote, of creating coronavirus variants. Now, according to this report, the FDA Vaccine Advisory Committee's booster shot hearing on Friday featured hours of testimony ahead of a 16-2 vote against the Biden administration's plan to roll out a third dose of the Pfizer vaccine for, quote, fully vaccinated Americans. The booster program, which may launch as early as this week, despite the FDA vote, had already spurred multiple resignations of top FDA officials. Quote, I'm going to focus my remarks today on the elephant in the room that nobody likes to talk about, that the vaccines kill more people than they save, end quote. That was Steve Kirsch, executive director of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund, told the FDA Vaccine and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee in his testimony, quote, today we focus almost exclusively on COVID deaths, saves, and vaccine efficacy because we were led to believe that the vaccines are perfectly safe, but this is simply not true. And he cited data from the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, a vaccine injury tracking system that is put together by the FDA and the CDC, which has documented more than 6,000 reported cases of heart attacks soon after COVID vaccination, and VAERS is known to undercount by as much as 99%. That's 99%. Quote, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System shows heart attacks happen 71 times more often following these vaccines compared to any other vaccine. There are four times as many heart attacks in the treatment groups in the Pfizer six-month study report. That wasn't bad luck. If the net all-cause death from the vaccines is negative vaccine boosters and mandates are all nonsensical, this is a case today. So what we have is we have people coming forward, highly credentialed people, outstanding pro-vaccine medical doctors and physicians, and every one of them is being attacked now. And they're being deplatformed on Google, on Facebook. Now, mind you, these are people that have never had a controversial situation in their life, not one. And there was a Dr. Jessica Rose, a viral immunologist and computational biologist, who testified at the FDA booster hearing that risks from the COVID-19 injections, quote, outweigh any potential benefit. I repeat, the vaccines outweigh any potential benefit. Not a word, not a word in the media about her, nor about the more accurate figures about how many people have died. And there's a lot of studies now showing that that amount in the United States can be as high as 150,000 dead and almost 1 million injured. That's how high the statistics go. And not a word. No one in media and no platform is allowing this information to be shared. So my question to you is simple. How much of all of this censorship might have to do with the fact that Google's parent company, Alphabet, also owns two pharmaceutical companies and they have collaborations with many of the large drug makers?
I mean, I think that it's a huge conflict of interest for Google to be invested in vaccine companies. Like, they've got this one vaccine company that is trying to create a universal flu vaccine. And I know that there's a whole bunch of other conflicts of interest that Google has. But I think that there's actually a bigger elephant in the room that we've got to be looking at. And that is the investment hedge funds that not only run Google, but pretty much run every big tech company on the planet. And I'm talking about specifically Blackwater and Vanguard. And those two companies are the majority shareholders in pretty much every single big tech organization. They run the pharmaceutical cartels. This hedge fund has enormous power. And until we look at the power that these hedge funds wield and what influence they have, I think that exactly the policy of Google is less materially important. What we have to know is what is the policy of those that are pulling the strings behind the curtain. And I believe that the people that are pulling the strings behind Google are also pulling the strings behind Big Pharma. I mean, how can they not? They're colluding so well together, working in lockstep in order to push this vaccine, to hide the damage. And the fact that they're doing it together is not a coincidence. It's collusion. And it's easy to see that it's collusion. The dots are right there. We just need to connect them. And what you see today is the result of that. People, if they talk about vaccine injury, if you're Robert F. Kennedy, who is the top advocate for, you know, children's health and reversing these draconian vaccine mandates that are injuring hundreds of thousands, if not millions of children a year. I identify as vaccine injured. I feel I'm part of this group of people that have been injured by the vaccine industry. And as one that has done their investigation, we find out that, well, you can't sue them. There's a special court that you have to go through. The entire system is rigged against patients. And now the lawyer that, you know, Robert F. Kennedy, he's now had his voice silenced. And unfortunately, the alternatives out there are not as mature as YouTube is. And the reason why people hate YouTube but stay on it is because YouTube has access to customers and audience members. And that's something that even though Rumble and BitChute and Brighteon and all these other platforms are growing on a day-to-day basis, they still have a long way to go before they are the size of Google, before they are the size of YouTube and Facebook. And that's why you see all these people that, you know, give up, swear off Facebook and YouTube only to come back weeks later because they know that these big tech companies are where the audience is today. And will that change? That could change. It's possible that Google can go the way of MySpace and suddenly just evaporate and disappear. But today, that's not the case yet. And YouTube, using its power, is deciding on who can speak and who can't, and removing the First Amendment right from those that want to use the digital public square in order to talk about the issues that are important to them. And if the public square is being converted into a private square, which is being done right now, then the question is, well, where can we turn to in order to get, you know, the public square, the market of free ideas? And what we're finding is that a noose is tightening around those options as well. Apple's working with the lockstep of big tech in order to silence information that they don't like on any application that's going. And Apple is doing this through locking down the rules for their app store. And one of the organizations that have come and told us about this is actually Parler and Telegram, saying that they've been forced to install censorship programs by Apple such that if people try to say the wrong thing, then an AI system can go through and intercept the message and block it. What was one of the first things that we saw being blocked on Parler was any mention of the word ivermectin, you know, such as ivermectin can reduce the severity of COVID-19. And what do we see months later after this censorship was introduced in the App Store? We're seeing the overwhelming evidence that ivermectin is effective in treating the SARS-CoV virus and lessening the COVID-19 disease that follows. And, you know, what this is a constant reminder that the reasons for censorship is not to eliminate misinformation. It's to eliminate true information, which allows us to exit this pandemic, which is not as much a real pandemic as much as it is a tool to seize control of countries all over the world. You know, this isn't just happening in the United States. This is happening in Canada. This is happening in the UK. This is happening in Australia, New Zealand, and the English-speaking countries. They're all descending into a lockdown state. And this isn't just to say that the English countries are experiencing lockdown. There's lockdown happening in other countries as well. For example, in Vietnam, they've got military lockdowns that are happening, and people are scared. And the thing is that, you know, if people knew that ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or quercetin or zinc or vitamin D lessens the severity, then maybe we wouldn't be here today if this information was allowed to circulate on these social media networks. And so what's happening now is that even if you try to bypass big tech is furthering its lockdown across platforms that it doesn't even own. And as someone that's about to launch my own social media site for video, one of the things that I've decided against is launching an app on the Apple Store or Android. Why? Because I know that it's going to be censored. I know that in order to get the native app on the phone, I'm going to have to do a deal with the devil. And I know that if I would have to do this, then everyone else that is trying to release anything that's political knows that they've got to now install some sort of censorship regime that Apple has mandated to its software developers that want to program for the App Store. And it's, you know, it's this same pattern where there is a mandate coming from these private corporations that affect all businesses in the United States. And if you don't comply, then you get disconnected from the network. You know, whether that's a job, you don't submit to the dangerous vaccine, you get eliminated from your job. If you don't, you know, submit to the App Store's recommendations, then you get disconnected from the App Store. And the only source of open information right now is still the web browser on desktop computers. And the question is this cartel going to allow this freedom of information, this freedom of speech to persist, or are they going to try to lock everything down? And what it's very clear to me is that they're going to go for the latter. I believe that big tech is going to try to shut down even information that's typed into your browser, because they cannot allow free speech anywhere, because free speech anywhere is a threat to their totalitarian narrative. And this isn't something new. We've had totalitarianism for, you know, thousands of years. In fact, it may be as old as civilization itself. And the only way to make sure that everyone's on the same page is to make sure that no one can contradict the words that are being said by the central authorities. And this is no more important than when the words that the central authorities are saying are misleading and actually just tools of power in order to solidify their power base. And that's what we're moving to now in America. The thing that we still have is we still have a degree of freedoms. We still have a representative democracy that's decentralized and mostly controlled at the local level. And so, America, my question for you is, you know, now that the clock is running down, are you going to be able to leverage your freedoms in order to preserve the fire of freedom going forward and hand it down to our children? I want to let you know that if I have anything to do with it, the answer will be yes. And I hope that others will join me in that effort.
Is it possible that this is in relationship with our intelligence agency, the CIA, the National Security Agency, Homeland Security, FEMA, etc., that they're working hand in glove together because they're engaged, these agencies are chronically engaged in undermining our freedoms here and abroad?
Yeah, it is, you know, this case that they've got undue influence in big tech. And what people need to understand is that It wasn't like the intelligence agencies infiltrated these companies. They funded them. Facebook, Google, you know, they were funded by the venture capital front group for the CIA, which is EQTEL. EQTEL funded Google. Google is a creation of the deep state. And that's what they always were. And I find that it's ironic that looking back, Google was the company that the media loved the most. And now it's the company that's giving us the most fundamental existential threat that we've ever seen as a nation. We've had lots of challenges, but the subversion of everyone's access to information all at the same time without warning and denials while it was happening is the unprecedented existential threat to the United States and to the rest of the world. Because if we aren't allowed to find information that is truthful, then the only thing we're going to have left is an amalgamation of their misinformation. And you get what you get today, which is a brainwashed populace that is overly frightened of this COVID. Like, this COVID has a death rate of less than 1%. But if you're listening to the mainstream media, you might have the unexpected expectation that this disease kills 50%. And there was a really interesting video of Bill Maher talking about this and saying, what the heck is wrong with the media where, you know, people that identify as liberal believe that the mortality rate is 50%. Well, you know, that misinformation is not going to be corrected because it's being pushed by, you know, essentially these intelligence organizations, the CIA, you know, and I also lump into their globalist institutions like the IMF and the World Bank. You know, they're either controlling the CIA or the CIA is controlling them, or they're in collusion and they're all being controlled by the same person. Take your pick. I don't know exactly how the structure works at a certain level, but I do know that I can see it from my perspective here as just a normal commoner. And it appears to me that they're all working together. And when I see the fact that they're all intertwined with their funding from these intelligence organizations, what I don't see is I don't see a company operating under free market capitalism. What I see is a socialism for the rich, an attempt by the intelligence agencies to get ahead of the tech trend with a collection of companies that appear to be really good, but in fact are controlled assets that at a certain time in the future will flip and become propaganda outlets that control and seize the means of information distribution. And this is exactly what we've seen in the United States. And if you think that it was just in the United States that Google and Facebook and Twitter lied to Congress and lied to the media and lied to their stakeholders, I want to let you know that the United States is not alone. This also happened in India. This also happened in Brazil. And they went before these government bodies and they swore up and down that they had no political censorship whatsoever. And then you'll see exactly how Google lies in their own words.
Indeed, we go to extraordinary lengths to build our products and enforce our policies in an analytically objective, apolitical way. Our platforms reflect the online world that exists. Our job, which we take very seriously, is to deliver to users the most relevant and authoritative information out there. And studies have shown that we do just that. Objective third-party studies, including most recently a comprehensive year-long assessment by The Economist of Google's results, have found no evidence of bias in either direction. Additionally, in May of this year, our data scientists analyzed daily click-through rates on search results to the official websites of members of Congress. The data showed no difference in these metrics, whether the member was a Republican or a Democrat. We also analyzed official YouTube channels for all senators who have them, and we consistently found a balance between Republicans and Democrats. Our platforms, such as Google Search or YouTube, deal with massive amounts of information. And to manage these volumes, we rely on algorithms and implement testing and evaluation by third-party raters. None of our systems are designed to filter out individuals or groups based on political viewpoints. Operating at the scale we do, we're bound to get criticism from both sides, and we do. From time to time.
So, you know, here we go. We've got Mr. Karen Bhatia, who was hired by Google in order to testify before Congress that political censorship was a conspiracy theory. And, you know, as a full-time employee working at the company, I could just go into their internal search engine and type in blacklists. And I was able to get 40 pages of political censorship that they were using, not just on America, but on the world, you know, going so far as even banning the search term for the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution of Ireland, because that constitutional amendment had something to do with abortion. And so if they're willing to censor people's searches for their own constitutional amendment because of political censorship, how can Karen Bhatia come and say that their audits have produced no evidence of political censorship? Like, it's just absolutely mad. And let me just give you an example of the degree of censorship. This was a discussion on Google's internal servers talking about Breitbart, and the message goes like this: anyone want to hold their nose and look through Breitbart.com for hate speech? And the person replies, hate is a really difficult concept since writers have become very artful in demeaning other groups without being explicit about it. That said, do review Breitbart pages against our hate policies, and we have stopped showing ads on policy violating pages we found. We're working to improve our ability to do this at scale. When sufficient violations have been found, we'll take action at the site level. So here's Google plotting and scheming to eliminate the revenue stream of Breitbart.com because they're interpreting neutral language to be actually racist. And you've got Karen Bhatia testifying to Google on behalf of, or testifying to Congress on behalf of Google, that Google doesn't use any political censorship. This is so opposite of reality that there should be a class action lawsuit by the Google stockholders, because Google, when they went IPO, made a number of statements and promises to the American public. One of them was do no evil, but another one was to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. How can they do that when they're deciding who gets paid and who doesn't through the internet's ad networking system, which Google has a monopoly on? And the answer is that this is a contradiction, and that Google has essentially lied to Congress. And now when we finally see that this is what Google was all along, it's too late. They have pretty much, you know, monopolized the internet on several different fronts: search, video, news content. And now if you don't comply with their ever increasingly draconian edicts, then you're going to see that your page disappears off their search index, off their news index, off their video index, and you're going to get replaced by people that are towing the line. And those are the people that are going to be amplified. And the question is whether we can, you know, do anything about it. You know, obviously we are retreating to our, you know, I guess you could call them social media safe spaces like Telegram, where we're not going to be censored as much. But that may just be a temporary island that we can seek refuge in. And I believe that as we go forward, that, you know, we're going to see more and more of this Chinese style social crediting system get installed, and all these separate companies actually start to merge together in a final step, so that we can have a tight knit, all encompassing computer surveillance system that watches us, that judges us, that scores us and ranks us, and that this ranking system is going to be used as a credit score on whether you can buy a ticket for an airplane, or get a, you know, or be allowed to travel, or be allowed to travel to different states or even countries. And that this shadow credit system is going to follow you wherever you go. In fact, it's already being used. Like if you say the wrong thing in a tweet or social media and it gets back to you, you can get fired or your family can get fired. And this is something that a lot of us that speak out, we realize that our careers are essentially over. We will never be able to work again in San Francisco as a software engineer because of my history as a whistleblower. And if it wasn't that, it would be the things that I said on Twitter to expose truth. It is unacceptable now in San Francisco to be against vaccine mandates. And if you are against that, then you pretty much have to hide or keep a low profile. And what's scary is the idea that this wouldn't just exist in San Francisco, that this will be tested and then rolled out to even the rural countries. And that's an ever increasing an evolution of the computer systems that we use. And we have to assert our rights and we have to be able to put a stop to this and figure out what the rights of freedom of speech look like in a computer age, because we definitely knew what the freedom of speech was in the paper age of our founding fathers. But what do they mean when anything can be surveilled, that there's essentially eyes everywhere and that all these eyes are going to be connected together in these brains that are being hosted in these giant tech silos that exist, in Silicon Valley, but also, the partnerships with the other Five Eyes nations like New Zealand and Australia and the UK. What access do they get to be able to snoop on American citizens? And I believe that, this is going to be the fight of our time, and that right now we're seeing this with the vaccine mandates that are rolling out. How far are they going to push this? And are they going to be successful? And if they are successful at pushing out conservatives, are we going to see a rapid transformation of our economy now that a whole section of the population has been essentially ethnically cleansed from roles in government, roles in the private sector, health, and, as this continues on, and there doesn't seem to be any stop. We're not able to really push back on against this. If everyone gets fired, then, are we just going to be left with the reins of power being controlled by these radical leftists that are taking over all these countries? And I think that that's what's going to happen. And, it's coming to a conflict, and I don't know how this conflict is going to resolve itself.
Zach, I see this a little differently, and see if this makes sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there is already vaccine apartheid. You see it in Australia, where they actually had the federal government arresting people, beating people up, injuring them if they go beyond the 2 mile limit from their home. They're wearing they have to have an app that identifies and proves that you're at home, proves that you're not outside of the zone you were allowed to go. And unfortunately, the Australian people, 99.9%, accepted this. A small number protested, and they were beaten, tear gassed, and rubber bullets shot. Now, normally, we see rubber bullets being fired on people from totalitarian regimes, and rubber bullets can blind you, can kill you, and have. Not a word from our mainstream media. And I'm curious to know how you account for a seeming contradiction within the big tech world. Tech geeks, by and large, in Silicon Valley and elsewhere, tend to be very libertarian on the liberal side of the political spectrum. They can be very individualistic and nonconformist. They pride themselves on that. And yet they are playing right into the threats of liberalism becoming its form, as you just mentioned, of authoritarianism. And that's what we're seeing. But it's not true liberalism, because true liberalism is against totalitarianism and authoritarianism. It is a corporate democratic liberalism, a special hybrid that the Clintons and then Obama and others have foisted upon the American psyche. And we're certainly seeing this with censorship, which is antithetical to the libertarianism. So I see that. But more importantly, Right now, there is some bipartisan cooperation to reevaluate Section 230 from Clemson's Communication Decency Act. In hindsight, at the time of the bill, it can be considered a decent piece of legislation to protect net neutrality. However, that was in 1996, 2 years before Google was founded, and well before the rise of social media such as Facebook, Twitter, and the like. It was 5 years before Wikipedia started. At the time, no one had any idea about how influential social media would become or how these Silicon Valley companies would emerge to dominate the internet and the flow of information. So what are the fundamental problems with Section 230? That is what has protected Wikipedia, including among the large firms being targeted. But unfortunately, it is exempt because it is a nonprofit and the Hawley bill only identifies the large private firms. And as such, now Google and Facebook and Twitter can then say, you, Robert Kennedy Jr., or you, Del Bigtree, or you, you know, any one of 1,000 people who have made legitimate and scientifically based challenges against Fauci or the rollout. And now those people immediately go to the internet gulag of Wikipedia that has no pretense of being fair or unbiased. It's completely biased. It is completely wrong. It is completely, in my opinion, the most corrupt place in the world where a person's reputation, no matter how stellar, will be trashed and locked in. You can't change a single syllable of a wronged bio. And yet the average American still goes there, and the average person throughout the world goes there. So now they've got Wikipedia to be the judge, jury, and executioner, where they are simply saying, we're providing true information, trust us, but don't trust anyone else. And someone now is starting to fight back. So is it possible, here's my final point, that Biden and all the people around him and the Silicon Valley and the corporate America and their ideologues are so radicalized and making so many changes so quickly, from what pronouns a person's allowed to use before being trashed to the cancel culture, professors are afraid to teach, and to people not being able to work or not being able to travel, to being a second-class citizen, that form of apartheid, and to where they can go so far that the silent majority, the 105 million people who once were Democrat or Republican but now are independent, will finally stand up and say, enough of this nonsense. And I believe that had they done the Barack Obama hustle, and everything he ever did was a hustle, and Clinton's, the difference was that Obama did it where he was loved and beloved by people, even the ones he betrayed because of his charm offensive and the media's support of him. And the Clintons, sleazy that they are, were not loved, especially her. And he was forgiven for all of his crimes against humanity and personal agendas, that even they can not slow down how fast and hard they're pushing everyone. And Americans don't like to be pushed fast and hard. But had they done their whole program slowly and with the media laughing with Obama, they could have put everyone in prison. Nobody would have blinked their eye, the media. We are a nation that is sick and deformed. The many, many people, they'll go along with anything. They're lemmings. And I'm starting to see this is Nazi Germany 1938. Not yet the death camps, and hopefully never will be. But that's how complicit we are, because the big media are the Joseph Goebbels, in my opinion, conditioning people to then hate and repel away from the people who say, hold on a second, I have a legitimate reason. I have COVID, therefore I've got natural immunity. Or someone else saying, hold on a second, why can't we have a freedom of speech? Why are we being challenged and our freedom of speech on any issue is no longer allowed? Or hold on, and suddenly those people no longer count, freedom no longer counts, totalitarian regimes are in place, and only then will people look through the window saying, gee, what did we do wrong? Well, fool, you thought you forgot to think and act. You were a coward. That's my personal opinion. Your thoughts?
One of the hallmarks of fascism is when the cartels get blanket immunity to allow them to do whatever they want to do. And Section 230 and this vaccine court system that they have are kind of really great, startling examples of fascism in practice. But that being said, there's actually some good things within Section 230, which you've alluded to before. One of them is that they actually have a way to cancel the protections of immunity for these big tech companies. And the big tech companies should only be allowed to not be sued, because that's what Section 230 is. It's immunity against being sued for content that users post on your system. And Gary, the only way that these companies should be able to have that immunity is if they satisfy the other constraint on the other side of the ledger, which is that they have to not employ political censorship, period, right? You can censor someone because they're lewd. You can censor someone because they're lascivious. There's, you know, obscene, disgusting, total fair game for removal. But as soon as they cross the line over to political censorship, they lose that liability shield. It gets stripped from them by Section 230. And so for all these people out there saying that Section 230 needs to be removed, Section 230, you know, needs to be reformed. When I look at Section 230, what I actually see is a well-formed law that if it was actually enforced, right? Like, let's say that there was a judge that made a finding of fact saying that, declaring that Facebook and Google and maybe one of these other big tech companies are engaging in political censorship. Boom. There goes their liability shield. Now Section 230 doesn't even apply, and you can sue them like any other normal company for defamation. But the problem is that even though Google, Facebook, Twitter, these big tech oligarchs are in clear violation of their responsibilities under Section 230, they still are able to get protection from it. And that is something that the American people needs to realize, is that Section 230 does not actually protect Facebook when they do political censorship. It's actually the spine of the politicians and the judges to not hold these big tech corporations to account of what is written down in the law books. And so I think that we're being led down a trap to try to repeal Section 230. People are saying, oh, the problem is Section 230. We need to get Section 230, as if Section 230 was an unconditional liability shield. But it's not. It's a conditional one. And the thing is that there are a lot of small folks that, such as myself, when I throw my hat into the ring, that want Section 230, because Section 230 protects us from being sued frivolously. Like, imagine that, you know, Gary, you launch a forum because you want to have free speech, and someone comes in there and posts a naughty picture or says some sort of vulgar, obscene, or an incitement to violence, and all of a sudden that you're facing jail time. That is the reality of pretty much every other country out there on earth. You know, if you say the wrong thing or someone posts the wrong thing on your board, you are responsible. And you can go to jail. In America, the land of the free, Section 230 means that that doesn't have to happen. You are given, as a operator of these social media services, protection from being sued as long as you are not politically censorious. And so what is really going on here? I think what's going on, what's been told to me, is that it's the stockholders themselves that want to eliminate Section 230. Because what they want is they don't want their corporations to go the way of MySpace. They don't want to just wake up one day with their user base imploding. They want to be able to censor with impunity and not worry that everyone's going to go to one of these, you know, free social media networks that don't have the censorship. And in order for them to not have that competitive disadvantages, they've got to be able to bring in the regulators and regulate everyone. Remember, regulation does not actually hurt the big companies. It cements their position as the market leader. And this is exactly what Google wants to do. This is what their stockholders want to do. One of the reasons why Google is breaking the internet is because they hope and want to have regulation on the market sector. And so for those of you that have, you know, that are in committees, working in politics, please, for the love of all that's good, for the freedoms that our forefathers have entrusted to us, please keep Section 230 for the little guy. Do not revoke it. If you do, we're going to end up like Europe, where our freedom of speech is stripped away.
Zach, unfortunately, we're out of time. We thank him very much for being on the Progressive Commentary Hour. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.